This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. The municipal election is 3 weeks away on April 4th. And joining us at ISU's University Galleries are the active candidates in races taking place in Wards 1, 5, and 7. In Ward 1, Susan Feldkamp and Jamie Mathey. In Ward 5, Lupe Diaz and Johnny Painter. And in Ward 7, Scott Black. Sonny Garcia withdrew from the Ward 7 race last month after the deadline to RSVP for this forum, but since his name remains on the ballot, Scott Black was given the option to appear tonight, and he has accepted. Also joining us for this live broadcast is our audience. Thanks to everyone for attending tonight's forum. We would also like to acknowledge Farnsworth Group and Henson Disposal and Recycling for their corporate support for this event. This forum will feature questions developed by GLT News with input from those submitted at WGLT.org. There will also be time for opening and closing statements. This forum is co-sponsored by the McLean County League of Women Voters. We're happy to have them involved again tonight. And the League's Ann Eaton and Katie Pratt will be the timekeepers for the event. We determine the order by drawing numbers, the lowest number going first, and after that, rotating among the candidates alphabetically. That brings us to our opening statement by Jamie Mathey, who drew the lowest number. You have 1 minute for your opening statement.
Thank you, Willis. Again, my name is Jamie Mathey, and I'm running for Ward 1 Alderman. My wife, Kelly, and I are college kids who came down to go to ISU and never got around to moving away. We met and fell in love and bought a 110-year-old house in Dimmitt's Grove. It needs a lot of love, and it always has, but it's okay. It's got character and style that you just don't get anywhere but the old parts of town, and we love it. It's the love of Bloomington that drives a lot of my actions. We own two businesses in downtown Bloomington, and I helped found a third one, and I'm very proud of the fact that we've created jobs for over 40 people in town. I participated in community all along the way and helped make Bloomington a better place to live through my participation in nonprofits and time and talent. And, you know, while I love Bloomington, I will say that it's not a perfect town. We still have things we need to fix. The can has been kicked down the road a lot. We've got unfunded pension plans we need to worry about and infrastructure that needs a lot of help. My fiscal common sense necessary for running a small business and the leadership skills I've developed over the years are going to be essential to help the City Council navigate some of the mess that we have coming up. And I think together we can continue to make Bloomington a wonderful place to live for generations. Thanks.
Thank you. And now next, Johnny Painter. You have 1 minute for your opening statement.
Hi. Thank you, Willis. I'm Johnny Painter, and I'm running for Ward 5 Alderman. I've held this job for 3 years, and I know the city's now moving in the right direction. Streets, sewers, and various other infrastructure needs are finally being addressed in a meaningful way, and I want to see that continued. Economic development continues to be a high priority of mine. Since I've been on council, we've totally revamped Empire Crossing, and we had the opening of Hy-Vee and Firehouse Subs. An Oberweis Dairy Burger Joint and a Kroger Marketplace are scheduled to open in the near future in Ward 5. As a member of the Behavioral Health Coordinating Council, I'm working on better mental health outcomes for our community. I would like to continue those efforts in the next 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny Painter. And now we move on next to our opening statement from Scott Black. Scott.
Thank you, Willis, and thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here this evening. My name is Scott Black, and I'm running for re-election for Ward 7 Alderman. I have had the distinct pleasure of serving as the Alderman for the past 4 years. Ward 7 encompasses northwest Bloomington, so just northwest of downtown, beautiful historic neighborhoods, beautiful area. And I'm running for re-election because I want to preserve and promote our historic neighborhoods. Since being elected in 2013, I have a proven track record of accessibility and results for Ward 7. My vision for the next 4 years celebrates our diversity, keeps our neighborhood safe using community policing, prioritizes investment in historic neighborhood streets, sewers, and sidewalks, supporting the local economy and growing the local economy by helping small local businesses and entrepreneurs. And I believe we must embrace innovative solutions to old challenges and collaborate with our local governmental partners to get the best value for taxpayer dollars. I'm proud of the 4 ward meetings that I've held, dozens of neighborhood association meetings that I've attended, thousands of emails I've responded to, and countless phone calls that I've gotten, and I hope to continue that level of accessibility as I move forward in Ward 7. Thank you.
You're listening to a special Sound Ideas in a Bloomington City Council Candidate Forum live from ISU's University Galleries. We're in Uptown Normal. Lupe Diaz, your opening statement. You also have 1 minute.
Good evening, friends, and thank you to the McLean County League of Women Voters and WGLT for giving us this time. The reason I'm running to be Bloomington's next alderman from Ward 5 is we need new leadership that knows how to work with people and build a better tomorrow for our families, friends, and neighbors. We need an ambitious economic development policy to create jobs and lower our tax burden. This policy will decrease our business vacancies and increase revenue. Our economic policy must be accountable, measurable, and value added to our community. We must have a transparent city government that restores confidence and trust in our elected leaders. I will fight for transparency in all areas of our city. Our infrastructure must be unsurpassed. The budget must have $10.5 million minimum a year going to our infrastructure. The city budget must be balanced, and we must lower taxes when possible. Moving our city on this path will create higher property values, a community we are proud to call home. It's time for new leadership in Ward 5. Let's build a better tomorrow together.
And our final opening statement comes from Susan Feldkamp.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Sue Feldkamp. I'm running for Ward 1. I never had the knowledge that I'd be running for alderman, but I attended the Bloomington 101 class. I was put on the Citizens Advisory Board. I attended various meetings throughout the city and was also liquor commissioner. I'm running for Ward 1 because of my concern with the direction the city's moving towards in this recession. Taxes are killing the small businessmen. We need to do something now if we wish for them to survive. If we wish to have quality of life, we need to be concerned about good infrastructure, roads, quality, water, sewer, police, and fire. And it's for those reasons that I'm running.
All right, that concludes our opening statements for tonight. Thank you, candidates. Ideas for questions for the forum were submitted at WGLT.org, and we're currently still accepting questions for our next forum with the remaining Bloomington Council candidates in Wards 3 and 9. That forum is Thursday. Then on March 21st, we'll have a forum featuring the four candidates for Normal Town Council, and our final forum featuring the two candidates for Bloomington Mayor will be on March the 28th. That is a change from a previously announced date. You can find a complete schedule of all these forums at WGLT.org. That's also where you can submit questions for these upcoming forums. Now, our first question. If you are elected, you will need to work closely with the mayor, who is also up for election. And, of course, the mayor must work closely with the council. So, the question is, who are you voting for in the mayor's race and why? And that question goes to Johnny Painter.
I'm voting for Terry Renner because I'm used to working with him. I know what to expect from him, and he's got a great deal of energy. He's got a vision for the city, and I appreciate all that he has done so far. That's who I'm voting for. Thanks.
And the question next goes to Scott Black. Same question. Who gets your support for mayor?
I will be proudly voting for Mayor Renner. I believe Mayor Renner has a proven track record of getting things done, accessibility, accountability. I definitely respect my colleague, Alderman Lauer. I think that he brings a certain perspective to the table, but I will be supporting Mayor Renner, and I look forward to a vigorous discussion between the two of them.
And next, same question, Lupe Diaz.
I actually know Mayor Renner and Alderman Lauer, so it's kind of hard for me to publicly say who I would vote for. Whoever is mayor, I hope to work with them, and thank you.
Okay, and Sue Feldkamp, your vote for mayor.
I have worked with Mayor Renner as well, but in this election, I'll be voting for Kevin Lauer. With the changes we need and the taxes that need to be brought down, it's vital that we get our vote out for him. I'm afraid that if we stay with the same mayor, taxes will go up instead of down, and the city cannot sustain that. Thank you.
And finally, the question is for Jamie Mathey. Who would you vote for mayor and why?
At this point, I plan on voting for Mayor Renner. One of the biggest reasons is I think that going forward, communication with constituents is going to be essential. We got some difficult times ahead with the budget as in trying to make things work and get the infrastructure fixed. And in Ward 1, I don't feel like Alderman Kevin Lauer has actually done a very good job of communicating with constituents. It's the most common thing I hear as I'm going around the ward knocking on doors. So Mayor Renner has stepped up communication for the city significantly and increased transparency, and I really appreciate those efforts.
All right, we're listening to a special Sound Ideas in a Bloomington City Council Candidate Forum live from ISU's University Galleries in Uptown Normal. I'm Willis Kern. And now we're moving on to question two, and Glenn Ludwig helped us with this question online. Your job as alderman requires you to represent neighbors from a geographical area, yet you vote on ordinances and deal with issues that affect the entire city. What is the balance ratio you give to city versus ward-only concerns? And we're going to throw this question first to Scott Black.
Thank you. And this is a struggle as part of the ward system, is that we represent a specific area, but we have to think on a community level. And the way that you go about this was a learning process for me, but I'm proud of the way that we've been able to go about it. I like to make sure that I keep in touch with my residents, and that comes in the form of neighborhood association meetings, answering emails, knocking on doors, talking to our residents. And there's a piece of leadership that goes along with it as well. So when some of these community initiatives come through, ordinances come through, we need to show the leadership and have that conversation with our residents. So if they have questions, concerns, they know that they can come to us and we can explain what's happening and hear their feedback, because ultimately, the more voices that are at the table, the better decisions that we make.
All right, very good. Thank you. Next to answer that question is Lupe Diaz.
I plan to make myself available to everyone in our community. Yes, I'm elected by my constituents in Ward 5, but at the same time, I also represent the city as a whole. So what goes on in Ward 1, Ward 5, Ward 7, Ward 9, it affects the whole entire city. It's all of our tax money, so therefore, I'll make sure I do my best to represent everyone in my ward, plus the city at large.
And the question next goes to Sue Feldkamp. What is your ratio for balancing ward versus citywide issues?
I will give 100% to each of them. I believe that I will have monthly meetings inviting all of Ward 1, and I'm always going to be available by phone or email or meeting in person for anybody in the city. And to our last question with Kevin Lauer, I just want to add, when I went door to door in the campaign, I talked to many, many people who really enjoyed him, having him as Ward 1 alderman, and they look forward to him as mayor. Thank you.
All right, next, the question, balancing ward versus city issues, Jamie Mathey.
I think it's the quintessential problem that we all face. You know, we're elected by a ward to represent the entire city, and open communication, I think, is the key to that. I've always admired Alderman Karen Schmidt and the communication that she has maintained, not only for those people in Ward 6, but also for anybody in the city who wants to be on her mailing list. I intend to emulate that model via social media, email, text messages, phone, whatever is most appropriate or most comfortable.
That's kind of hard to put a ratio, but pretty much if we prioritize the city issues and what's at hand in front of us today, right now, I think as a whole, we could put 100% behind it with all 9 aldermen and mayor.
And Sue, I know you said 50-50 or 100 for both. Does that equal basically 50-50 then?
It would be. Yeah. Plus.
50-50 plus. And Jamie, what about you?
Well, I think that, you know, everybody's going to have about the same answer, that it's 50-50 across the board. You know, the most important thing is to make sure that every constituent's voice is heard, however, so everybody deserves a reply, whatever the question they're asking. You know, right now there's a lot of questions that don't get answered and people don't feel represented, and we need to step that up and change that.
Thanks for choosing GLT and Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kearney. You're listening to a special broadcast of the Bloomington City Council Candidate Forum, co-sponsored with the McLean County League of Women Voters. We're coming to you from Illinois State University's galleries, live from Uptown Normal. I'm Willis Kern. Time for question number three now, which is somewhat related to question number two. There's been a lot of attention to the speed limit on a stretch of Hershey Road. It was reduced due to an outcry of some residents who live along the street, primarily in Ward 5. There's now a citizen effort to get the limits raised. Should it be raised, and what do you generally think about speed limits, especially considering the Complete Streets Initiative? And this Ward 5 candidate, Lupe Diaz, you have the first chance to answer this question.
My opponent chose not to hold public hearings and instead moved fast to move our speed limit to 30 miles per hour, thinking this is all is needed to get reelected. These are the kind of changes where public input must be required regardless of what side of the issue you're on. This is a lifestyle change for everyone in the community. I will hold quarterly town hall meetings to be sure we are listening to the people we represent on similar issues now and in the future. This is currently the process in Ward 2 where they held a neighborhood meeting to consider the change and get input from area residents. This should have been done in Ward 5.
All right, and the next question goes next to Sue Feldkamp.
I believe that we should raise the speed limit on Hershey. I drove the whole thing from one end to the other, and there's no reason to have it at 30 miles per hour in areas where there are no homes. We have only two subdivisions that lead into the area, but not connected to anybody's driveway. Therefore, it doesn't need to be slowed down so people can get up their driveways, and it just slows everyone down. I'm all for bringing it up a bit.
So that takes care of Hershey Road, but what about speed limits in general? Are you in favor of raising them in general, or how do you feel about that?
I am not in favor of raising them in general because we have safety concerns. I do want it raised on Hershey, though, because I don't think there is a safety concern.
All right, and next, Jamie Mathey.
So I think it's actually not that easy to just raise it now. I think there are actually some state regulations that Public Works has to follow. The way I understand it is they can lower the speed limit anywhere in town to 30 miles an hour, but if you want to adjust the speed limit to any other number, the way that the law is written right now, I don't think that we can just turn around and just raise it again. There might be some technicalities that I'm not understanding, but I don't think it's quite that easy. In terms of how it was handled on that stretch, public meetings are always a good way to go to get citizen input. But we had heard, and there was a petition by citizens, we did have citizen input, and we did have people who were coming forward saying that this is dangerous for the area in their perspective, and that's how the entire situation unfolded to start with.
All right, thank you. Johnny Painter, what about the Hershey speed limit situation and speed limits in general in Bloomington?
Well, actually, I had three meetings about the Hershey Road speed limit. The whole conversation began in May of 2014 when the Kroger Marketplace had announced that they were coming in, and people at Spring Ridge were very concerned about it. Also, people further on down on Hershey Road were concerned about people speeding through their neighborhood. I listened very carefully to everything they had to say, and on June 20th, the council voted to adopt the Complete Streets policy. And since Hershey Road has been a problem for quite some time, we decided to start there. Actually, the speed limit changes four times in a 1.3-mile area on Hershey Road. And I ran the differential past an independent engineer, and he said that it slows people down exactly 20 seconds when you take the stoplights and acceleration and deceleration into consideration. So I would say I gave this a great deal of thought, and I did what my constituents wanted, and yes, I'm totally for Complete Streets. Thank you.
And Scott Black, you get the last crack at this question.
Thank you. At this time, I'm not interested in revisiting the Hershey speed limit. However, I have stated publicly, and I think this is the way to go about these future challenges, is to revise our staff traffic advisory committee. Right now, that's just comprised of staff members, and I believe that should be opened up in the interest of transparency, Citizen Engagement, Open Meetings Act, because what that will do is allow citizen input on these types of very controversial issues. I think it's important when we talk about speed limits to remember that safety is always the utmost concern. We talk up here about public safety, and there's a big difference in injuries when it comes to a 30-mile-an-hour crash collision versus a 35 and a 40-mile-an-hour. Then the differences can be fatal. If we were to revisit it, I would want it to go through a new process through STAC in which there'd be citizen input, citizen being put on the record, kind of modeled after some of the other like zoning, planning, those sorts of different committees.
All right, thank you for your answers, panel. We are now going to move on to question number four. This is one that was asked at the mayor's primary forum a couple of weeks ago. Do you believe the city should sell the Coliseum? Is it okay to sell it at a loss? What should happen to the debt assumed to build the facility? And what should become of the city-owned Pepsi Ice Center since the buildings are physically connected? And first in line for this question is Sue Feldkamp.
I'm not sure I can remember all those questions.
Well, just think Coliseum, selling it, and Pepsi Ice Center.
The Pepsi Ice Center is a wonderful facility. I think it attracts a good crowd in Bloomington, and I've been there. I've watched kids skate. I've seen their hockey games. I think it's a wonderful place. As far as the Coliseum itself, it really wouldn't work to sell it at this time. Even if we sold it at a loss, we would have huge issues with paying the money back over the years. I'm not sure what it is that they can do with it. Maybe turn it into a library, I'm not sure. But it can't stay as it is.
You're saying the Coliseum can't stay as it is?
The Coliseum is not bringing in enough money. We're putting too much money forward and there's not enough coming back from it. I don't think we have enough programs and shows there right now to sustain it. And it needs to be self-sustaining to stay open.
All right, thank you. Jamie Mathey, do you believe the city should sell the Coliseum? Is it okay to sell it at a loss? What happens to the debt? And what should become the Pepsi Ice Center?
Well, the Pepsi Ice Center is actually revenue positive right now. It actually generates more money at that facility than it costs to run it. So there's no reason to get rid of that or look at those programs. If anything, I think that they wish they had more time on the ice they could book because they could sell it all. In terms of the Coliseum, you know, the conversation about selling it has been going on for years. I just don't know who everybody thinks that we're going to sell this to, unless we sell it at such a significant loss that the money we get does not cover the debt service. We would end up eating that debt service as a loss. You know, we all know that we were in a very bad contract with Siam, and we are hopefully have put that behind us. I want to see VenueWorks have a couple of years to give it a shot and turn that around, because I think it can be an asset of the community with the scheduling that we do have there. There could be more programming, and it could be a great place for families everywhere in town.
And next, about the Coliseum and the Pepsi Ice Center, Johnny Painter.
Well, no, I don't believe that we can sell the Coliseum at a loss. They've got a multi-million dollar mortgage that we'd have to end up paying, and that just doesn't make sense at all. Hopefully, with the new leadership, things will start turning around, and I hope at the very least we could break even. The Pepsi Ice Center is a wonderful venue, and I am very, very heartened that it is doing so well. And it's really a good thing, and I would like to keep it there right where it is.
And next, Scott Black, let me re-ask the question here. Do you believe the city should sell the Coliseum? Is it okay to sell it at a loss? What should happen to the debt assumed to build it? And what should become of the city-managed Pepsi Ice Center? The buildings, the facilities are connected.
Thank you. And I received this question at a ward meeting that we hosted a year or so ago from a resident, and I'll answer the same way I answered them. To whom? For how much? And I will be happy to have a conversation with anybody that wants to purchase the Coliseum, but I don't want to commit myself to taking horrible losses. I don't know what somebody would be willing to pay for the Coliseum. I wasn't around 10 years ago when the Coliseum vote came through. I know that the Coliseum harbors a lot of negative feelings from the residents, but we have it. It's here now. And so my focus is, how can we make the Coliseum more successful? And when I look at VenueWorks and the things that they're doing, I think that that's going to be a big impact. People talk about how terrible the Coliseum is. I think that's a terrible way of looking at it, and just wrong. I mean, look at Country Music Night. You go out there, you see that place is packed. Look at the bars beforehand. You got that, those are packed. Good luck trying to find a place in those restaurants. Those people are buying drinks. They're buying or having dinner. They're spending money in downtown, and that's a good thing. And so my goal is to continue to focus on what makes the Coliseum successful and how do we maximize our asset.
Thank you. And next, and the final person to answer this question is Lupe Diaz.
We need to do our best to promote the events at the Coliseum and let VenueWorks move the Coliseum in a positive direction. I don't think we've given them enough time to turn it around. They have 10 years to make up, so therefore we should give them at least a year or two to see what they provide for the city, I mean for the Coliseum as well. I think they will in turn turn it around, and selling it at a loss, I don't see that unless someone's going to buy our debt. If they buy the debt of the Coliseum, maybe I would look into selling it and speaking to those people. But at this time, I would say no. I think VenueWorks is working on a positive. And let them keep doing what they're doing. And like Scott, I concur with Scott said, you know, those events are packed. Maybe we need to look at having more events 7 days a week as well. So,
and if you did find a buyer for it, what about the Pepsi Ice Center?
That's a good question. That's I guess I would say, you know, talk to them about, you know, possibly buying that as well. You know, because that's doing a positive, so therefore they're going to make a profit from that venue, so therefore they wouldn't have that much of a loss. But I still say we need to promote 7 days a week events, if possible.
You're listening to a special Sound Ideas on WGLT and a Bloomington Alderman Candidate Forum live from ISU's University Galleries in Uptown Normal. Question number five, Jeffrey Smith wrote to us wondering about Eastland Mall. There are vacancies occurring there with major anchors Macy's and JCPenney announcing that they will be closing stores there. What, if anything, can the council do to stave off these closures? Should incentives be offered to existing businesses, as they are sometimes to companies lured to the community? And what do you think of incentives in general? This question first goes to Jamie Mathey.
So I think that it's not just Bloomington that's having an issue with malls. This is a nationwide problem that we're having. And a lot of it stems back to the internet and changing trends in how shoppers buy. Every big box store is having issues right now. They're not just closing in Bloomington. We've got chains that are closing nationwide because they have not successfully been able to make the conversion. I know that the city has been working with the management company behind Eastland Mall to hear what their ideas are first, you know, to see what do they need and how is it going to be effective to keep as much open as we possibly can. But there's a very real possibility that at some point in the future, the mall as we know it just goes away and we watch Eastland Mall transfer into something similar to College Hills Mall with smaller specialty stores that are focused on the individual needs of the shoppers. We're in big box stores with very limited customer service just go away because they're not sustainable anymore.
Johnny Painter, can the council affect some sort of positive effect at Eastland Mall? And should incentives be offered? And how do you feel about incentives in general?
Well, I don't know. It just depends on what the company is and what they want for an incentive. I think that incentives are overdone and we could cut back on them. But as far as the mall goes, I think that we need to think outside the box and look at high-end stores, because when people go to Brooks Brothers and pay $2,000 for a suit, they want to try it on first. They're not going to buy that online. And possibly put a movie theater in there, maybe some nice restaurants, and have it be a little bit different than just a regular mall with stores.
All right. Scott Black, what about vacancies at Eastland and elsewhere, and are incentives useful?
We have to acknowledge that the industry is changing and that malls of the past are not going to be the malls of the future. I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the trends are towards smaller retail shops, and we're very fortunate in Ward 7 of having a number of them. Retrofit culture comes to mind, smaller local businesses. And my focus is on, we don't want Eastland Mall to become a vacant property, but how do we adapt it to the new model? And there's a lot of ways you can go about that. When it comes to incentives, our economic development toolkit is something that we need to be keeping a close eye on and having constant conversations with the Chamber of Commerce, EDC, stakeholders, taxpayers, to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make sure our economy continues to grow. My focus, though, is primarily on seeing smaller businesses thrive. So would I be open to having a major incentive for a big box store? I'm not really sure of that. I don't think that's going to be financially viable. However, I'm not opposed to the conversation. I like to have all the facts on the table before we make major decisions, because we'd be doing a disservice to taxpayers by speaking in absolutes on this issue.
All right, next in line about Eastland Mall and incentives in general, Lupe Diaz.
Well, I believe the local government should play a vital role in our economic development to diversify our local economy. Therefore, with Eastland Mall transitioning as they are, as someone told me a fact, I think 2006 was the last year that a enclosed mall was built in the United States, or I think in the world for that matter. Don't quote me on that one, but the United States was 2006. Therefore, I think what the Shops of College Hills has developed into, I think we should look into something like that, or we should also look at possibly an outlet mall that's actually larger than what we have on the west side that could bring in bigger stores, like, and bring more revenue to the city.
All right, thank you. And Susan Feldkamp.
Thank you. I think that incentives will work for some places and for some businesses, but it will not work for the mall. I agree with what the other people up here are thinking, and it's the way of the future is the internet. However, if you want a good idea to get more people shopping, let's lower those taxes. That has to be done to sustain shops and businesses in the town of Bloomington. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Here is another holdover question that is kind of related. I'm old enough to remember when a lot of the stores at Eastland Mall used to be in downtown. Sears, Penney's, Ward's, some of those. But downtown is really undergoing its second renaissance right now. And what role should downtown redevelopment play in helping to improve the city's economy? And what role do you think aldermen should play in this process? We're going to go to Johnny Painter for this question first.
I think that we need to encourage the DBA to continue to do the work they've done to try and revitalize downtown. I think that it's really important that we do try and bring in different stores to downtown and different kinds of businesses as well. I can envision there being a kind of a high-class restaurant bar area around the Coliseum that would help that. And it's really important that we take care of our downtown, because right now it is draining taxes from our local economy. And in order to shore that up, we have to work with everybody to make it go.
All right. Next for this question is Scott Black. What about downtown redevelopment? What role should aldermen play in encouraging it, if it should be encouraged?
I love downtown. Downtown is an asset to our community. It's one of the reasons a lot of people choose to live here. It is unique. It's quirky. It's historic. It's got unique shops. It's got different kinds of bars. I mean, there's a stark difference between Rosie's in downtown and Elroy's to Mulligan's and all those. So I think it's good that we have a diverse group of businesses that are out there. We passed the downtown plan. It was controversial. I think we need to be staying diligent in working that plan. My vision for the next 4 years would be that we focus on trying to get more events happening downtown. The farmers market is wonderful. What else can we do? I've heard car shows that have expressed interest. We've closed down the museum square to have concerts. Those types of things I think are great. We have a lot of assets downtown. Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts brings in people. Great restaurants, unique businesses, excellent shops, downtown loft living. It's not for everybody, but there are people who are that love it, and I count myself as one of them. As an alderman, I want to be the cheerleader for downtown and support policies that improve and enhance that image.
All right, thank you. And next for the question, what about downtown redevelopment and what role should aldermen play in it? Lupe Diaz.
We have a downtown Bloomington master plan that needs to move forward. As a leader, I will be sure moving forward to promote and grow our downtown community and businesses. My ward may be in the northeast side of Bloomington, but the whole city is important that all aldermen and alderwomen work together to move Bloomington forward. As Scott was mentioning events, I've thought of events that we should hold downtown. We have weekends that's open that we could have promote a lot of events. But we also need to promote investment in our urban and suburban areas with a healthy, positive balance. Different strokes for different folks. I'm a big believer in having a diversified community that promotes both urban and suburban living. Bloomington is a city that is large but still has a small town feel.
All right, thank you. And Sue Feldkamp, downtown.
I'm with Scott Black on this. I love our downtown. I work downtown. I eat downtown. I love the farmers market. I love all the quaint little shops. You can do anything downtown. I don't do the nightlife. I'm a bit old for that. But that has its purpose as well. It brings in a lot of money for the city. And as long as they find a way, the aldermen, I think, should find a way to make sure that the bars are being cleaned up at night after the patrons go home after 2 or 3 o'clock. And parking is also an issue downtown. I have suggested to the city before, the parking lot on North Prairie and Washington, where we have city cars, should be moved to the top of the parking deck on weekends to make room for people that want to shop downtown. So far, that has not been done, and it would make a big difference if they have a place to park instead of pulling through and seeing no parking place and heading home. Thank you.
All right, and Jamie Mathey, downtown. You've been there a few times. Tell us about your vision for that.
So I'm a little biased. I own 2 businesses in the downtown right now. I love downtown as well. I love the architecture, the uniqueness of it. You don't find that in many communities anywhere in Illinois. The downtown does have some specific needs that need to be addressed. We still have sewers that are far over 100 years old in downtown. Then the sewers and the water mains are causing issues with the roads. So at some point, we're going to have to, just like every part of the older parts of the town, we're going to have to do some serious work to bring that infrastructure up to speed. The downtown, though, does fill a unique role, though, it acts as an incubator for a lot of businesses as well. The rents for retail space are fairly inexpensive down there, and we've seen a lot of shops that have opened up down there run by entrepreneurs that have thrived and then moved out of downtown to be successful in other parts of town. I know, for instance, right now there's an effort going on to build a tech business incubator in the downtown area. And I've been approached by those folks to have a conversation. I'm really looking forward to that, what we can do there. There's fiber all over downtown, and there's just so many opportunities.
The disagreement between Bloomington and Normal over the Metro Zone is highlighting cooperative efforts between the municipalities. Where are you on the Metro Zone dispute, and how do you weigh the interests of the city of Bloomington versus the community as a whole? And this question first goes to Scott Black.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the Metro Zone. I voted in support of terminating the Metro Zone agreement, and I believe that it's part of a broader economic strategy that I think both Bloomington and Normal need to take part in. I know that Normal didn't agree with that sentiment, and that's their right to do so. However, I am committed to working with our intergovernmental partners to continue to get the best use for taxpayer dollars. We want to create value, and it does not behoove us to be competing against each other for every opportunity. I was very proud of the council, and we passed that resolution to really redouble our efforts to focus economic development regionally. We want to grow our economy within the framework of BN Advantage, and I'm committed to doing that. I know that we had instructed our city manager, Hales, to put a meeting on the calendar with Normal. I think we need to be having regular institutionalized meetings between the town of Normal and the city of Bloomington. We cannot be left behind when it comes to growing our local economy. We have a disadvantage by having the last name of Illinois, and so working together is the only way to ensure that our community will continue to thrive in the next generation.
Thank you. Lupe Diaz, same question.
My opponent once said, "What has Normal ever did for Bloomington?" My response is simple. Who backs up our city when our EMS, firefighters, and police are backed up with calls? My question to my opponent is simple. When did you ever sit down with our fire and police chiefs to find out how and when they do when or what they do when they run out of our first responders to answer the next 911 call? We really need to build a relationship with the town of Normal. My opponent once again chooses to follow instead of leading. I will work to put together a joint meeting of the city councils without the mayors and the city managers or staff. I want this to be a working brunch with both councils to work on economic development and collaboration. Then we'll have to have a follow-up meeting with both mayors and our staffs. So I would like to have a sit down with the councils without the mayors or the city managers to see what we could work out.
So just to clarify, had you been on the city council on February 27th, would you have voted to dissolve the Metro Zone or not?
I think it's an issue that we should have sit down and look at before we went to that point. So yeah, it would have been probably 3-6. Okay.
And Sue Feldkamp.
I think that it was time to resolve the Metro Zone. It reached its goal after 30 years, and Bloomington made the right choice in wanting to end it. Next contract, I think maybe we should put an ending date on it. Bloomington and Normal need to work together through fire, through police, through other issues. We shouldn't be fighting over stores and taxes. We should try and balance them together so we have the same incomes coming in, not have to worry. And I hope that we do work with Normal again on other issues, but it was the right thing to do at this time.
All right, Jamie Mathey, should the council have voted to dissolve the Metro Zone agreement on February 27th, and what happens with the value of the city of Bloomington versus the community as a whole?
Well, I think that there's a lot of confusion over the issue because what has been it's very much turned into a he said, she said story in the media. And at this time, I'm going to choose not to second guess either the council. So, you know, it's dissolved, it's done, and we're moving on. The more important thing now is to remind folks that we are really a single community. People that have just moved here in the last decade don't even understand why there's a separate Bloomington and Normal. It's confusing to them. And we need to focus on that single community effort with libraries and fire stations. I think we need to bring the shared sales tax back to the table and have a much more detailed conversation and look at that to see if that becomes a tool that we can use for economic opportunity for the entire area. You know, right now we have had businesses who have played mom versus dad and to run and see who they can get to give away the candy. So we need to stop that from happening and remind everybody that very few people care if they're shopping in Bloomington or Normal. They just want the products that they're wanting to buy today.
So again, if you had been on the council the night that vote was taken, how would you have voted?
Given what I know right now, I would have supported it.
Supported the dissolution?
Yes.
Okay. And Johnny Painter, you were on the council that night, still are. What is your opinion of this?
Yes, I voted to dissolve the Met, and it had outgrown its original purpose, so it needed to end.
All right, very good. Thank you. You're listening to a special live broadcast of Sound Ideas in the Bloomington Alderman Candidate Forum, sponsored with the League of Women Voters. Last year, the council adopted a complete streets designation for Bloomington, and we touched on this in an earlier question. According to the National Complete Streets Coalition website, complete streets are designed and operated to enable safe access for all users. Andrew Guile of Bloomington wrote us a note. He said the location of the West Side Aldi and the Walmart across the interstate highways is a barrier. And he wonders, as alderman, how will you work to implement complete streets and protect vulnerable road users from dangerous situations? And the first question, this question goes first to Lupe Diaz.
Public safety is a top priority for me. All users, regardless how we get from point A to point B, should feel safe and comfortable of how they travel. I would adapt whatever policy that achieves that level of safety. Everyone's safety is my big top concern. Thank you.
All right, and Sue Feldkamp.
Complete streets is important as far as our safety. Complete streets are important as far as our safety, and I would like to see all of the streets worked on and taken care of so that they're not only complete in the safety to access, but that they can be safe for our cars to be driving on by taking care of the infrastructure and taking care of the streets and sewers in them. Thank you.
What about the ability to get across interstate highways in order to get to Aldi and Walmart, the locations on the west side of town?
I have shopped at both of them, and I do frequently, and I've never had an issue with it. So
riding your bike there, though, right?
I wouldn't ride my bike across the street.
But what about those who do? A lot of people do rely solely on bike travel.
I'm not sure what the answer for that is right now because I don't know how many users we have for bikes, especially out in the area on the west side. Obviously, if we have a lot of users, we're going to have to think about widening the streets so that they can be used. But for right now, I wouldn't change anything.
Okay, Jamie Matthew, how important is making the streets safer for bicyclists and pedestrians and providing access for places like we've discussed?
It's ironic because when we were kids, we were always taught that walkers have first priority and then bikers have second and then cars come after that. And somewhere along the lines, that changed. And I'm not really sure when and why it happened. The Complete Streets program to me is... It's a long-term plan. It's not we're going to change all the streets in the next 5 years. It's we're going to change the streets and reconfigure how we use them over the next 25 or 30 years as we would naturally have to repair those streets anyway. So, I think that we will see a gradual change in the town and change of perspectives as we go along. But, today, tomorrow, there's not a lot that we're going to do with complete streets. It's just as the money is spent, each year by year, we need to have a priority and a focus there. With the West Side Aldi, I'm not sure there's a lot we can do because I'm pretty sure the Illinois government controls the interstate and repairs for the overpass there too. So, I mean, there would be a lot of coordination with IDOT that would have to happen. But, some of that we're going to be, have to work with them and see what they will allow us to do.
All right, thanks. Johnny Painter?
I'm all for complete streets. I voted for adopting the complete street policy. And as far as how are we going to make those changes, well, we have asked for a traffic engineer to be budgeted for next year. And hopefully they will be up to date on all the newest trends and they will be able to guide us through these changes. We've worked without a dedicated traffic engineer for years now, and it's high time we got one. Thanks.
All right, and finally for this question, Scott Black.
A couple of years ago, I went about 6 months or so without a car, and I got to see firsthand people who live in historic Bloomington who don't have access to a vehicle either because they choose not to have one or they can't have one. Perhaps it's out of their price range or for other reasons. And that experience really opened my eyes to the daily struggles of people who use alternative modes of transportation other than cars as their main transport. Getting groceries became a coordinating nightmare. Connecting with friends, I mean, Veterans Parkway may as well be a giant wall because you can't cross that if you don't have a vehicle. I was proud to support Complete Streets. I had my intern from Illinois Wesleyan a year or so ago do a lot of research on how other cities have adopted that policy and how that's impacted their overall street philosophy. And really what we're talking about is, as Jamie had pointed out, it's a long-term strategy. You know, we're not going to be cutting out every road to make it wider. We're not going to be doing that in a reckless manner. We're going to be methodical. We're going to be cost-effective because we need to make sure that all of our residents, regardless if they have a vehicle or not, have access to the services that Bloomington citizens enjoy.
All right, I'm Willis Kern, and we're coming to you tonight on Sound Ideas from Illinois State University Galleries from Uptown Normal. The recent proposal for an immigration reform is in the news. It means different things to different people. But the current administration is emphasizing the deportation of undocumented immigrants. And Joe Strano asks, what should be the city council or the city's policy regarding police cooperation with federal authorities? And what actions will you take to regarding that policy? And this question goes to Susan Feldkamp.
I believe we should always work with the police officers and with the government when it comes to things like this. We need to stand together. I don't believe in safety cities where you can break the laws. I think we need to work with the authorities and do whatever it is that we need to do.
And this question goes to Jamie Mathey.
You know, this is it's weird sometimes how the federal government can affect our everyday lives when we like to pretend they live in Washington, D.C. off by themselves. We have a decent population of people in town where they are the dream children that we've talked about. And I don't want to see families ripped apart just because we have not figured out a way yet to deal with all these issues. You know, we haven't had a conversation as a community. We haven't had a conversation as a state, and we really haven't had a conversation as the United States of America yet that is comprehensive to wrap our brains around all the implications of what we're talking about right now. I wouldn't want our police officers to get in trouble or violate any laws along the way, but I also wouldn't advocate that they purposely go looking for people and families to rip apart either.
All right, thank you. Johnny Painter, immigration, and how should the city handle these possible changes coming its way?
Well, I think that we are bound to follow what the federal government mandates. That said, I think that the current policies are pretty cruel. And I don't agree with ripping families apart. And we have one of the most strict immigration policies in the world, and it has worked really well for us. And I don't see a need to change that. But that said, we are bound to do what we're mandated to do.
All right, thank you. Scott Black, should the city have an immigration policy, and how closely should it be aligned with federal government edicts?
I think what's become clear in the last 90 days is that you can't really predict anything out of the Trump administration and nothing really of substance in terms of policy. So I can't really comment on what the administration is going to do or not. But what I can say is that you can count on me to stand against any type of discriminatory practices from the federal government. I love our diversity in Ward 7. Ward 7 is the most diverse. We have people of color, different genders, orientation, sexual orientations across the board. And I think we should protect that. That is an asset. I don't believe that the federal government should be operating in this realm. This should be a local issue. And you know, when people talk about Washington, it has record low disapproval ratings. I mean, nobody supports what's going on in Washington. So why are we letting them tell us how to live in our community? And so I will stand up against any type of policy that comes down from the federal government that targets families, targets our diversity, because it's an asset worth protecting, and I'll be there.
And Lupe Diaz.
I think our sheriff has stated what he's going to do. He's not going to allow federal agents to come in and pull families out. of schools. One concern has been, you know, my last name is Diaz, and one concern is my wife has is, will they come into my daughter's school and try to pull her out of school? Which I'm American. I was born in Chicago. My mom is American. She was born here, so therefore I am American. So those are concerns that we have in our own household. If they come in, and what would I do if I was elected alderman? Of course, some of my conservative friends probably wouldn't like this, but I would stand with the rest of the people up here that stated that they'll stand firm against anything like that. Therefore, yes, I disagree with. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to move now to the closing statements of our event tonight. You're each going to have 1 minute to provide your closing statements. And we will go in reverse order from where our opening statements were, which means that Susan Feldkamp is going to give her opening closing statement, rather, and you can begin when you're ready.
In just 3 weeks, the citizens have an opportunity to change the course that Bloomington is now on. The only way to make this happen is to get out and vote. Everyone needs to vote. This is more important than the presidential voting. This affects you in your town, your taxes, your people. If we want a more thriving Bloomington, we need to stop the raising of the taxes now. This is your opportunity to demand a change in fiscal responsibility. Let's vote to make Bloomington prosperous and fiscally responsible again. Please vote for me for Ward 1. I will be there for you. We need to demand change. We need to get out and vote. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And next with the closing statement, Lupe Diaz.
We must end divisiveness of our city council. We must keep an open dialogue regardless of our political and personal philosophy, our issues of the day. Communication with each other will build a stronger community that brings all solutions to the table. Our policies must be inclusive, helping all neighborhoods and citizens. This will grow our local economy to create jobs and lower our tax burden. In order to keep a balanced budget, my five top topics that I've been campaigning on is an ambitious economic development policy, transparency and accountability, unsurpassed infrastructure and public safety, open communication and collaboration, and reasonable budgeting. It's time for new leadership in Ward 5. Let's build a better tomorrow together. Elect Lupe Diaz, your next Ward 5 alderman. God bless.
And next with closing statements, Scott Black, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Willis, and thanks to GLT for hosting this event and the league as well. It's been a pleasure talking about the issues that faced our community and Ward 7. I'm proud of the track record that I've put together over the last 4 years. I want to continue to make sure that we keep our public safe. We fix our streets, sewers, and sidewalks. We want to target historic Bloomington in terms of making sure our funding dollars have the biggest impact. I want to continue to grow our local economy by supporting small local businesses and developing entrepreneurships. And I want to continue the level of accessibility that I've shown over the last 4 years. I'm happy to take phone calls from people that either live in the ward or don't. Get coffee, gonna have lunch, talk about whatever is on someone's mind, because I believe that the more people that are at the table, the better decisions that we make overall. Looking forward to having a campaign meet and greet, knocking on doors, talking to voters about the issues that matter to them, because I love our community. I love our neighborhoods. I love our historic core, and I want to see it continue to be successful, and I want to grow it so it's preserved for our next generation. I'd be honored to have your support on April 4th. Thank you.
And 1 minute for your closing statement, Johnny Painter.
Thank you so much for hosting this. I care about my constituents, and I work hard to address their concerns. I have answered hundreds of calls and emails concerning crumbling roads, broken, heaving sidewalks, missing sidewalks, burned-out streetlights, and various other neighborhood issues. Each and every time, I've done my best to address their concerns. We've made great strides in the past few years, bringing our budget under control and moving our city forward. I would like another 4 years to expand upon that, and I'm asking everyone to support me for Ward 5 Alderman. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jamie Mathey, you have 1 minute.
So first, I want to say thank you to the league and to GLT for hosting the forum tonight. I also want to say thank you to everybody up here for stepping forward to say I can help That makes you all amazing people in my book, so thank you for that. Open dialogue and open communication are going to play a huge factor in Bloomington's future. As Ward 1 Alderman, I'm committed to that spirit of open communication with all the residents of the ward and indeed the entire city. Whatever format works best for you to reach out, please let me know your concerns, and I'm happy and I'm here to help. I've demonstrated over the years and hopefully tonight as well that not only do I have a sense of love for Bloomington and responsibility for it, but I also have the capability to affect real and positive change in the city of Bloomington. If you want more information about my campaign, you can visit my website at www.matthewfordward1.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Jamie Matthew for Ward 1. We're one city and we're one community. Everyone in this room and those listening at home are choosing to participate. Please educate yourself on local issues and get involved. Please vote.
Thank you, candidates, for taking part in this live on-location edition of Sound Ideas and the Bloomington City Council Candidate Forum, co-sponsored with the McLean County League of Women Voters. We're accepting questions for the next forum coming up Thursday night online at WGLT.org. Thanks to everyone at GLT, thanks to everyone here at University Galleries, and thanks to everyone at the League of Women Voters for taking part tonight. I'm Willis Kern. The municipal election is April 4th. Thanks to you for attending and for listening. This is WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University.